We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
There's a lot of memories that come and pop in your mind, and we've been fortunate for some of us to be here for three of them. And I think back, and I think in 2010, I think in Boston, not Philly, and I think immediately, I think Kaner the magician making the puck disappear. 2013, I think it's 17 seconds. This year, I've never been more proud of a team than I am of our players from this year's achievement. And this one will go down, and it will be, in my memory, is what made it this cup the best memory is all about team. Thank you.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Happier times for Blackhawks head coach Joel Quenneville. That was after the Hawks popped the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Cup Final in 2015 in all three of those Cup Championships. Also very different. Oftentimes people ask, which is your favorite? Man, they're all my favorite for different reasons. The first one's always going to be great. And then 13 was the magical regular season and the truncated season. And 15, they were fighting with each other during the regular season. But that did not preclude them from rallying around each other and winning that cup. But Joel Quenneville is back in town. And who better to talk about what he gave to the Westside Hockey Club, the Blackhawks organization, than a guy who's been a part of it for many, many years, former Hawks defenseman Steve Conroy, good old number five, who does a great job on NBC Sports Chicago. Cons, thanks for the time. How are you today, bud?
Mac, Mark, I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are outstanding. Thanks. I assume you have heard there was a little dust-up at Johnny's Ice House today between Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith, a little bit of a wrestling match. Toews joked about it afterward. I guess no harm, no foul, just boys being boys, right?
Yeah, you know, it's happened before on teams I've played with. In fact, it happened with a couple of brothers when I was here in Chicago. Brent and Dwayne Sutter got into it a little bit. And, you know, it's almost understandable because guys like the Sutters and guys like Johnny and Duncan Keith are very competitive. And, you know, even in practice, you're going to be doing battling drills and you're going to be out going up against each other. And you're always trying to best the other guy. And, you know, sometimes you might take a liberty. It might be a little slash or a little hook or whatever. And somebody doesn't like it and they respond. And before you know it, the wrestling on the ice. But you know what? It's been said before, and I'll say it again. It's very similar to brothers, you know, fighting amongst themselves, but there's no greater love than the love between, you know, family members. So those guys consider themselves brothers in that room. And if anything, it just goes to remind them that, you know, they're a close bunch and they're just, you know, very passionate about what they do.
Well, it was bound to happen with the Sutters, with all the Sutters that exist, that eventually there was going to be a skirmish among Sutters.
Hey, how would you like to be the seventh Sutter brother who didn't play in the NHL? He's got to feel worse than Cooper Manning does about brothers Peyton and Eli. There were seven of them.
Was there really a Sutter that didn't play in the NHL?
Yeah.
Wow.
There was, and I believe his name was Danny. He might have been the oldest Sutter, but I believe he won a lottery, believe it or not. So the six other brothers play in the NHL, and I think Dan won a lottery in the province of Alberta. So,
I'll take the lottery really over winning that.
Do any of the Sutters have the same first name? Did any of them? I feel like that's possible.
Oh, that's great. Steve, you got to know Joel real well. He's your neighbor out there in the western suburbs. What emotions do you expect him to be going through tonight? And there will be a nice tribute the Hawks will throw for him.
Yeah, well, Mac, you know as well as anyone, he's a pretty passionate guy. So I'm sure it'll be emotional for him. You might even see it come out. I'm sure the fans will be in full throat and behind him 110%. And I'm sure it's a game that he wasn't really looking forward to either. I mean, it's got to be tough, you know. A place he came to for however many years it was. He won three Stanley Cups in a short amount of time. And, you know, he felt like this was going to be home. And he built a nice big home here in the western suburbs. And literally within a year, he was fired from his post. So It'll be mixed emotions. I'm sure it'll be glad. He'll be glad when it's in the rearview mirror. But listen, it'll be really interesting to see the response he gets from the fans. We know that the fans absolutely love him. It'll just be interesting to see how long it goes on for, because I think it'll be an extended standing ovation.
Stevie, now that we're a little bit more than a year past that, you know, dust settles, picture gets a little bit more in focus. Was it the right time for Joel and the organization to go in different directions?
Boy, that's a tough one, Mac. You know, at the time I was kind of blindsided. I did not see it coming. But you know what? And every coach always says it, you're hired to be fired, and just realize that there'll come a day when you're going to have that rug pulled out from under you. I'm sure Joel thought it was a little earlier than he anticipated. But you know, looking back on it now, it's funny. Sometimes you do need a fresh voice. Sometimes you do need a different perspective. Not that the team responded right away, but you know, eventually they did. I think it was later in January where they went on a pretty good run and almost got themselves into a playoff spot. And just recently now, too, the team seems to be coming together. They've won five in a row, and they're playing some of their best hockey. So, you know, at the time, it was very difficult to understand. But, you know, looking back on it now, you know, coming from the perspective of having a different perspective and a fresh voice, you know, it probably was the right time.
Is it possible, Steve, to capsulize what has made Joel Quenneville a great National Hockey League coach?
Well, you know, Mark, sometimes you've got to fail before you succeed, and people don't realize that he had a St. Louis Blues team in the 99-2000 season that I think ended up with like 114 or 115 points, and they got bounced in the first round of the playoffs. And, you know, that hurt. That hurt Joel an awful lot. He thought he was going to win his first Stanley Cup, and to get bounced by an eighth seed, it didn't happen very often, but it happened to him. So, you know, sometimes you got to fall down a few times before you get up and you realize what's important and what makes a team successful. And I think, you know, those were tough lessons that you have to go through. And it wasn't just in St. Louis. It happened again to him in Colorado when he was fired midway through a season. So, you know, it's funny. Sometimes when you get knocked down a couple of pegs, at the time you think it's the worst thing in the world. And then when you look back in your life later, you realize that, you know what, that was an important growing time for me. It was an important lesson, and I learned a lot from it. So I think mostly for Joel, it was those tough lessons he learned through all those games he coached. It made him a better coach, and he learned from experience. And I think the other thing that, you know, I really appreciate about Joel is, you know, he makes you an accountable player. And I'll never forget his first year with the Blackhawks. He had a couple of superstars in Patrick Kane and Patrick Sharp. And he sat him in one game because they took a couple of bad penalties each. And he wanted to send them a message. And I think more importantly, he wanted to send the team a message that it's going to be my way or the highway. And, you know, I don't think coaches have that much clout now because these players are making $8, $9, and $10 million a year. But back then he had a bunch of young guys and he wanted to make sure they towed the line. And he sent a pretty strong message that game. And it was message received by everybody. So I think more than anything with the Blackhawks, he made guys accountable, and that's why they reached the heights that they did.
And another thing that on the other side of that, something that I heard Duncan Keith saying and paraphrasing that he also allowed young players to play with a certain sense of freedom as well. Not the penalties withstanding, but just the freedom mm-hmm. that they were allowed to have in playing. And Keith, I don't necessarily think he was taking a shot at Jeremy Colleton, but he was saying that, like, nowadays it's in general maybe more regimented on the ice, and that type of coaching style doesn't exist. Do you agree with that? Do you know what he's saying when he says that?
Well, yeah, I do, because, you know, Joel Quenneville wasn't the most naturally gifted hockey player when he played. He was a pretty high draft pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs, but it wasn't like he was a goal scorer. He was a defenseman and a defenseman first. So he understood that aspect of the game, and he realized that, you know, defense was going to win us a Stanley Cup. It wins you championships regardless of what sport you're in. So, you know, I think what he realized was, listen, some of these guys can do things that I never even dreamed of doing. So I'm not going to handcuff them. I'm going to let what they want to do when you're inside the other team's blue line. once the puck comes outside of their blue line and it starts coming through the neutral zone and the defensive zone, then you're gonna adhere to my system and you're gonna do what I want you to do. And that's what they did. So no, I agree with him wholeheartedly. Duncan is right. He gave them the green light. He let those, you know, offensively talented players do what they wanted to do, weave their magic. But then when it came time to defend, that's when you had to kind of stick to his routine and his system.
Yeah, that's something I noticed right out of the shoot with Q. A defenseman taking the puck into the corner. I mean, and Keith was obviously the best skater on the team, I thought. Sharp would argue with me on that. Johnny Oduya was a very skilled offensive defenseman. Hjalmarsson became more comfortable with it as he grew, and that clearly was a style of play that worked, and it keeps everybody excited. When you're asked to be a stay-at-home defenseman, not always the most exciting job in sports, was it?
No, it wasn't. And Joel, the one thing about Joel, too, is, and he's been in the league long enough to know that, you know, some of the rules changed while he was behind the bench. You know, whether it was the hooking and the holding, the two-line offside, he really took advantage of any changes in rules. And he was one of the first guys, you know, when they got rid of that two-line offside, he was like, well, let's just send one of our forwards all the way to the far blue line. We'll fire him a puck as hard as we can, and as long as he gets a stick on it, it's not going to be icing, it's not going to be a two-line offside, and we're going to be in the other team's zone. And, you know, I forget when that rule change happened. I should know, but it was probably, you know, 2007, 2008, and that's what the team started to do. So, you know, he might be old school when you look at him and when you look at the number of games he's coached, but he is very – you know, on the edge and with it when it comes to, you know, how to play the game, how to take advantage of maybe some of the new rules. And as far as the defenseman getting involved, you know, that was a big part of it too, because they pushed the blue line out, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 feet from the, you know, from the goal line. So now the offensive zone's a little bigger. So defensemen are having tougher times scoring maybe from the blue line because you're out farther and goalies are so good. So we'd have those guys, you know, as rovers, you know, rotating into the offense. And it was real important that one of the forwards recognized that and came back to be a safety valve just in case things went wrong. But, you know, he was all for that. He was all for getting defensemen involved in the offense. And that wasn't always the case in the NHL. And now every team does it. So, you know, he was kind of a pioneer in those areas too.
05, the year the NHL did away with the two-line pass. I don't know how we ever did this without the internet in the 80s and 90s. The internet's a wonderful thing.
You know, we lied, Mac. That's what we did.
We got away with lies. Right. It was better.
Blackhawks television analyst Steve Conroy from NBC Chicago with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Patrick Kane the other night becomes the 90th player in league history to accrue 1,000 points. He is 10 among American-born players, a little bit fewer than 400 points. I think Brett Hull is atop the list. I looked it up a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. Is he already, in your mind, the best American-born player? What does he have to do to cop that distinction?
I think I labeled him the best American-born player a couple of years ago, Mac. You know, I saw the trajectory he was on, and then, you know, 110 points last year. He's been at over 100 points, I think, you know, at least averaging the last 4 years. So not only will he eclipse Brett Hull, but he's also going to eclipse Stan Mikita, I would think, because it just seems like he's getting better with age. But I would think in the next 5 years, and his contract certainly runs that length, if not longer, the next 5 years he'll pass Stan Mikita as the greatest scoring Blackhawk of all time. So, yeah, you know, he's such an exceptional talent, and he's really evolved as a player. I think he's changed a lot even since his last Stanley Cup in 2015, which was, you know, 5 short years ago. But he seems to be putting in more work in the offseason. He's a very driven individual. He loves the game. He loves the history of the game. He's a real rink rat. He spends a ton of time at the arena. And when he's not at the arena, he's watching other games on TV. So, you know, there's not many players like him. And I played with a few and against a few who were real superstars, but they wanted to get away from the game when the game was over. And they didn't want to, you know, it's kind of like a mailman going for a walk on his day off. That's the last thing they wanted to do, was to think anything about hockey Patrick Kane's the exact opposite, and he has worked at his craft, and he studies the game during the season, and that's why, you know, he is among the best in the world.
Five straight wins for Kane and this version of the Blackhawks. Why have they won five in a row, and what do you think it means in terms of what this team might be able to do in the postseason if they get there?
Well, it's funny, Mark, because those first, you know, couple wins were against teams that you're figuring, well, you know, it's not real stiff competition, whether it was Anaheim or, you know, Ottawa they beat, and even Montreal had been scuffing along a little bit. But these last two victories have been eye-opening for me, you know, against Toronto in Toronto, and then, of course, against the Winnipeg Jets, who are now out of a playoff spot, but a week ago were thick in the playoff race. So I think it means a lot to their confidence. You know, they're scoring goals. They're getting it all through the lineup. You know, the first line with Jonathan Toews and Dominik Kubalik have been lights out the last couple of weeks since they've been together. But we've seen it from other lines, too. I think our fourth line's been really good the last, you know, half dozen or so games. And I go back to something that Jeremy Colliton did, I guess it was about a month ago, because we've been on a streak, I think, of, was it 11 wins in 13 games or whatever? Yeah, 11 wins in 15 games, I'm sorry. So they've won 11 of the last 15, but 15 games ago, he changed the D pairings up just a little bit, and he put Duncan Keith with Adam Boqvist, and then he put Eric Gustafson with Connor Murphy. And, you know, those two, and along with the third pairing, too, of Mata and Kubalik, Mata and Kuku, what it's done is it's allowed Jeremy to put out, you know, any set of D he wants at any given time. And those guys have found chemistry amongst themselves. They're playing better defensively and offensively because they're getting out of their zone so cleanly and so quickly. They're spending a lot less time defending. And, you know, that was a real issue the first month of this year, maybe even, you know, up until, you know, December. They were having problems keeping the puck out of their net, and they're having problems, you know, getting the shots down. And I know they're still giving up maybe a few more shots than they'd like, but the goaltenders have been absolutely fantastic. But I just love the chemistry now with the pairings on the back end, and I think it's paying some big dividends.
Stevie, always great catching up with you. Thanks a bunch for the time. Enjoy yourself tonight. We'll be in touch down the road, man.
All right, Mac, thanks, and all the best to Mark, too.
Thanks, Cons.
Steve Conroy, good old number five from Blackhawks Television. That has to be the most handsome pre-intermission and post-game studio show anywhere in North America. And Cons, for a guy in his 50s, holds his own.
Absolutely.
He's a good-looking guy. My wife says, boy, he's a clean-cut, handsome young, not so young, but handsome guy.
Great shape,
you
good
put
hair.
Him in there with Adam Burrish and
the Sharpie.
Impossibly good-looking Patrick Sharp.
Oh, my God.
Jamal Mayer's a handsome man, too.
No doubt about it. You know, and
then there's Pat Boyle.
Blackhawk hockey netminder. Kick ass. Crawford Crow. During a Blackhawks interview segment, we get a Bears text. Grody, had the Bears gone with draft analysis and expertise in 2017 and not wasted a second-round pick on Adam Sheen and instead waited and picked George Kittle instead, are we talking differently about Mitchell Trubisky today? I think so. That's from Mike in Rockford, Illinois.
What a shock.
How about that?
Just want to break into Bears out of nowhere.
Yep. It happened.
This conversation, whether it's Bears or Blackhawks, brought to you by your Chicagoland Papa John's. The new extra cheesy Alfredo pizza from Papa John's has all the craveable and flavorable goodness you want from a pizza. Extra cheese and a three cheese blend with Alfredo sauce and garlic parmesan crust. Try it today for just $10. Better ingredients, better pizza. Papa John's. Yes, there's a puck on the boards, needs a stick. Goop. Cuckoo. Did you guys know there was a guy in the Hawks named Cuckoo?
I did, actually. Yeah, I just hadn't heard the name in a long time.
Now you guys know how I feel when Parkins is talking about out-of-town NBA that isn't LeBron James.
Cuckoo.
Yeah. Cuckoo.
Yep. Cuckoo's on the team.
Cuckoo.
He's still here. That was good, though. Cons was great, man.
Hey, guess what? Guess what you don't have to worry about? Guess what we will not be discussing on Monday's show?
Hockey.
Well, I can't say that'll be the case, but there's something we will not be bitching about on Monday's show. No matter what happens, I'll tell you about it in a few minutes on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Will, what does it mean to you to make the Pro Bowl? Is that what you expect?
Next question.
Are you going to play?
Huh? Next question.
We don't want to talk about it.
Oh, talk about what?
The Pro Bowl.
Oh, man. That's... Next question.
Khalil Mack, the University of Buffalo. That was, after he's named to the Pro Bowl, he doesn't want to talk about it. Next,
right.
He went Ditka during the regular season.
Well,
when that
you
news
want to know.
Popped. Well, yep. We don't have to worry on Monday. We will not be complaining about Khalil Mack not showing up on the stat sheet because he is withdrawn from this year's Pro Bowl. Oh, no.
No, Khalil Mack. Well, that's too bad. When you say we won't be talking about it, you mean you, because you're the one who hates Khalil Mack.
I don't. Yeah. Now, don't promulgate fiction.
I love promulgating. Tony Romo, you don't like, and you don't
like
Khalil
him.
Mack.
I don't like
so
his...
There's two people right there.
I want to love Khalil Mack. His play was not lovable this year. He underperformed for a guy who was the highest paid player in the league's history. Defensively, he didn't do enough.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there
you do agree.
More should have.
That doesn't mean you hate him.
No. And I still think he is the best player on the defense, and I still think he will have double-digit sacks next year, and he has not lost any of the powers of Khalil Mack. I do think that he kind of admitted, because there was one point that he was flustered by the way the Minnesota Vikings handled him the first time the Bears played the Vikings, and he talked about how there was, I think he said, 3 or 4 guys taking a shot at him on every single play. And he did say that was a little bit baffling, as if to say he'd never seen anything like that. And then other teams obviously would copy that plan by the Vikings. So I do think that he has some overcoming to do, that he does have to make. He needs to clap back now and make the adjustment to get back to being at full force.
Wreck games.
Yes.
Well, he's supposed to. That's what he is supposed to do.
There's no doubt.
You know, Michael Thomas got double teamed this year, different position. He plays wide receiver for the Saints. He got double teamed. He caught 143 passes and set an NFL record. You think the guys in 49er, you know, their pass rushers have been double teamed from time to time?
I do think he should have broken through more, especially based on the fact that there so many times throughout his short career with the Bears, when he would make unbelievable plays, we would zero in on that and talk about it for hours. Look at him run over that offensive lineman. Look at the move he just made to get to the quarterback. So I suppose that when he's not making those plays, he deserves the opposite treatment. So, yeah, I mean, to some degree, I do agree with you that a guy being paid an historical amount of money, that he should be doing better. But I still think, don't you think that he will still? Don't you think he still has?
I hope so.
Like, this isn't like a situation where...
I don't know. I no idea. I mean, I sure hope so. I think the jury is out on whether Ryan Pace won that trade or not.
Wow.
If we get another year where he's in single-digit sacks and... You're looking at being in the top 5 at forced fumbles as his only money stat. Now there are some metric systems where he did very well this year, but in quarterback hits, actually, and that's quantifiable. He got hit the quarterback. Mm-hmm. He was I think 57th or something like that. Tackles for loss, very very low on the list, but we haven't seen him in a while, so no reason to bitch. I will watch the Pro Bowl. on Sunday. It's not about the Pro Bowl per se.
Right.
It's about the conversation around it. The biggest names in the game are there. They don't treat the event with any reverence, so they are accessible. And there will be interviews throughout the course of that 3.5-4 hour broadcast where they will talk about their team season. They'll interview some NFL alumni. They'll get some thoughts on the Super Bowl combatants. And that's why I will sign up.
Right. It's always very, it's really highly rated still every year, isn't it?
Yes.
The Pro Bowl
on people
television.
Watch it. People like to bitch, but they still will wind up showing up for it.
Right. Everybody will be bitching about it on Monday and about how they need to make it better and how it's ridiculous and why do we even play this game. But you're right. Right now, it's about the entertainment of the actual broadcast.
I had to check in last year because I had to see Mitch Trubisky in his Pro Bowl debut.
He was a Pro Bowler last year.
So many more down the road for him.
Yeah, coming soon. How about the fact that, speaking of quarterbacks in that draft class, Patrick Mahomes is 24 freaking years old, which is just the scariest part. He's been paid. He's going to the Super Bowl. I think they're going to win that Super Bowl. And then you've got Patrick Mahomes for the next 10 years at the peak of his powers.
I know. And he's going to get seriously paid probably this offseason, I would think.
Didn't he already get seriously paid? Hasn't he been? Didn't he get some?
No.
I thought he did already.
He hasn't.
He didn't get nothing yet. I thought he got
Shep, he's still working on his rookie contract, isn't he?
I'm almost positive.
Yeah, his deal right now is he's still in the middle of a four-year, $16.4 million deal. So he wants a $10 million.
Yeah, right. we had because the AFC quarterbacks, except for Ryan Tannehill, all were working, the three who were in the final four for the AFC, were all working on their first deals, and the disparity between the NFC Final Four quarterbacks, where you had Rodgers, Wilson, Garoppolo, and why am I not pulling the fourth? Kirk Cousins, yes. They were at $105 million between the four of them. The AFC starters in their Final Four of that conference were earning $13.5 million collectively. Each of the NFC quarterbacks in the Final Four made more than all four of the AFC quarterbacks.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, and in his case, Mahomes' case, they have to go to him and say, what would you like? Okay, fine. Well, whatever you want. Because 24 years old.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, 24 for Mahomes. Lamar Jackson just turned 23.
It's amazing.
You have a strong feel. This is the Chiefs game.
I do feel like
you're the first person
be...
I've talked to who feels confident.
The only thing I would say about this is that I don't know. And we could ask Hub about this too. I don't know that the Chiefs can pull the trick that they've pulled the last 2 weeks, where they look horrible early on and then they're able to recover in spectacular fashion. Like, I don't know if it's the same scenario where they would be able to overcome that against the 49ers. But when you have the best player on the field and the best player is your quarterback and he is that good, this is why I'm picking Kansas City to beat, at least early on.
I'm really glad you brought this up, because the conversation was happening here on the station yesterday where guys were saying, well, how many points would it take for you to feel like you have the Chiefs at halftime? And I believe Connor was the strongest on the Chiefs. He was the most bullish, saying, I feel like they can come back and win it if they're down by four touchdowns. And I'm saying, not against San Francisco, brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Not against this outfit. And I don't think if the Titans would have gone out to a four-touchdown lead, they're coming back against, as long as Derrick Henry was standing, I don't think that would have been the case. But they are a tremendous come-from-behind team. They can put a lot of points on the board in short order. But if the Niners were to get a 13-point lead on them, it's over. I don't think San Francisco would bend the way the other two teams have bent.
Well, yeah, if Raheem Mostert continues to, hey, just be you, man. Be Raheem Mostert and do what you do and get your 200 yards. But the Chiefs, well, I will say this, though. The Chiefs were able to quell the Titans' running game at Derrick Henry. And I realize that at some point in time, you had to stop running the ball.
They had to abort. Well, they didn't have the ball either. Andy Reid dummied it up. He condescended to actually run the football in the second half.
Yeah,
let me keep it away from them like they did to us.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, though. I mean, 13 points, still, are they that good that they would be able to sustain that against Patrick Mahomes and the weapons that they have on Kansas City?
Do you think
I don't know.
Is Raheem Mostert any good?
No, he's not. I think that was his I mean, come on.
This guy could wind up being a Super Bowl MVP, and then he's on his sixth or seventh team.
And then he's Kaiser Sose, poof, you'll never see him or hear from him again because he's a guy who's been with he didn't start a single game this year for San Francisco. Not a single game. He has played for, including the Chicago Bears, what, seven different teams?
I think the 49ers are number seven. Yeah.
Right. So
he wasn't even memorable at Purdue.
No, he wasn't good there. The right. old Danny Hope days that were quickly forgotten about.
So that's why
Danny Hopeless.
You give a lot of credit to Mike McGlinchey and the San Fran offensive line to where you can get a little cocky if you're Kyle Shanahan in doing the things you wanted to say. You know, I could put anybody back there and make this thing work. It's more about the system, like the old school Denver Broncos
yes.
days of putting guys in there, even Cleveland old school, putting anybody in the backfield and making it work because of that offensive line. No, I don't think Raheem Mostert. I don't think Raheem Mostert will start a single game next year either.
I was like, man, this guy is just going to have all kinds of praise heaped upon him, and he was terrific. But when you don't, how many yards before contact did he accrue? He had 220 yards. And I think 160 or so of those yards were before he was even touched. What?
Yeah.
What is up? The Green Bay front seven, the great Mike Pettine. You're going to be hearing that for a little while.
Yeah, they got pants. They were exposed.
Dude,
man.
One of my takeaways from the weekend was this. The Bears, the Packers aren't that good. The Packers are a good team, but they're not a great team, and they're gettable. They are a gettable outfit.
What becomes of the Packers next year? Like, are they, like, with Aaron Rodgers turning 37, yes, their defense did improve. The Smith brothers was a fun story. Adrian Amos did what he did this year for the Packers. But I don't know. They might be one of those. They might pull a Bears to where they had their big year this year, and then they come way back to the
first place schedule next year.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. I was thinking the same thing because I thought the Packers – I picked the Packers to win that game, and I think some of it was based on the fact that they just look strong towards the end of the season. A lot of times when a team looks good towards the end of the year, they become that team, but they just looked horrendous with everything that San Francisco was throwing at them. How about that stat? I don't know if you call it a stat or not, that San Francisco, one point in time, in real time, did not throw the ball for an hour and a half.
I loved it.
An hour and – oh, you must have just been in heaven.
Yes. Hey, if they're not stopping it, just keep moon pounding.
Oh, my
right?
God.
Right?
So what the hell is Tony Romo? Like, what is he as a quarterback? Does he ever – he's not a star quarterback, right? Would you put him in categories?
Tony Romo.
I mean, Garoppolo, yes. Yeah, Jimmy.
Are you trying to draw me back in on pounding away? You just want to hear me fire haymakers so the hate texters can come out and play with me again.
We did.
I know. I'm like, what is he talking about?
We did the Danny Mac George Tony Romo. But I don't know what Garoppolo is ultimately.
I think he's better than people give him credit for. I don't know if he's really good. I don't think so. They went on the road and beat the Saints in their building and scored in the upper 40s. I think that was, what, a 46-44 or 48-46 final, something like that. And he rallied them on their final drive. Obviously, biggest stage he's ever been on. Mahomes at least has been used to it, at least used to the spotlight to a much larger degree than Jimmy G. And as Shep pointed out yesterday, the G stands for...
Greasy.
As in single-digit passes in a playoff game.
If it works, it's magic.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want your youth hockey team to play in front of thousands? Make it happen with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Go to chicagowolves.com/youthhockey to learn more. Dave Wanstead is a regular on our show with Danny and me, usually on Thursdays, Fridays during the season, but we've been talking to him on Thursdays. I like to play the game. What will be the first, when I get in my truck, what's going to be the next voice I hear on the radio, and what is he going to be talking about? And I go see my shoulder surgeon today, and I come back down to the car, and it's like, okay, what's going to be on just shortly after, I think it was right after 8 o'clock today.
Mm-hmm.
And Wani was the guest, and our commitment to running the football, first words coming out of my radio, our commitment to running the football. And I go, yeah, I came to the right place.
You like that one, Mac? You like that one?
another gem he laid on us. I'll share with you in a few minutes. Hub Arkish, top of the hour. And Will Perdue from Bulls Television joins us 1 hour from now. Grody is sitting in for Parkins. I'm Mac, and you're listening to The Score.
Not to interrupt you, Dave, but yes. We have breaking news
Speaking of jobs,
the Chicago Blackhawks have fired Joel Quenneville. The Chicago Blackhawks have relieved Joel Quenneville of his coaching duties and have named Jeremy Colliton the 38th head coach in franchise history.
How many games into the season are they?
We're probably 15 games into this regular season.
They're on a five-game losing streak.
This is a stunner. I think it's a stunner.
You know what's interesting, and I ran into a – we were at the Dolphins, and I'm going to relate to this, and I don't know what happened here. We don't know. Obviously, I'll find out, or you guys will find out. What am I saying? I'll find out. But this is my point.
Digging deep into the Joel Quenneville dismissal 14 months ago, former Bears head coach Dave wants to open the mouth and say the things. Somebody's got to say something. I'll find out. I'll get to the bottom of this.
Guy
wins three cups and you show him the door. I'll find out.
Dave Wanstead citing sources that Jeremy Colliton has been hired as the next Blackhawks head coach. I know.
I can't help but wonder what his dolphin story was that was relatable as regards the dismissal of Joel Quenneville on the Hawks bench.
Oh, I'd love to hear that, man. Next time he comes on.
Think it's his?
Probably. I would have to think so. Yeah, he
knows. Mid-season?
He knows what it's like. You know, as we were talking earlier, I forgot Wanstead in the category of guys you looked forward to seeing again after they were gone from here. I'm excited about seeing the ovation Q gets. I don't know if I ever saw Dave coach at Soldier Field. I don't even know if he did coach at Soldier Field as the head man in Miami. I was at the game before it was what it is today. I think it was still called Pro Player Park when Ricky Williams of the Dolphins set a record. Most yards rushing against the Chicago Bears defense. Ricky rushed for, I think, 250 yards or something like that against the Bears on a rainy Monday night. I was very happy for Dave, but I was in the minority. Now people are on board because they see he's a lot of fun and
absolutely.
A good guy.
Yeah. And we could all remember the wild card win in Minnesota and celebrate that as one of the most surprising, the altar back, one of the most surprising Bears victories of all time. So there is something to stand up and cheer for as far as Dave Wanstead's coaching is concerned.
This hour of the McNeil and Parkins Show with Grody sitting in for Parkins today is sponsored by CarX. Save up to $200 on four tires installed at CarX.
Mac, I have, as I was sifting through Twitter this morning preparing for the show, I came across a list, and we all love a good list. And this particular list from a website called The Delight is the top live bands of all time. There are 30 of them listed. A lot of them are in our wheelhouse of bands that we may have seen. Would you like the list, and would you like all 30, or would you like to guess some?
I definitely am interested in the story and the list. Let me take a whack here. Stones have to be on the list, or I don't want to hear any more about it.
Yeah, Stones are on the list.
The Who have to be on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Pearl Jam has to be on the list.
Number 18 for Pearl Jam.
I would think U2 is on the list.
U2 is number 10.
Bruce Springsteen is probably on the list.
Number 8 on the list. Back to your Rolling Stones, by the way.
Yeah.
Sixth. Is where they are on
sixth?
This list. Yeah, they're probably
sixth.
Six.
The Who is
fourth.
My Aussie wacky power quintet.
You better
AC/DC.
Believe it. Number 5. They are just ahead of your beloved.
Did they leave Van Halen on the outside looking in, or did they get in?
They did get in.
They
Hold
did?
On a second. I'm scrolling here. It's a scroll situation. They are Iron Maiden, by the way, number 11. Van Halen, 13th. On the list.
Because they're hit or miss when you see them live.
Aerosmith is number 12 on the list. That was a controversial one. A lot of people thought, at least on this poll, that Aerosmith should have been a top 10 of live bands of all time.
I only saw Aerosmith once, and I can't speak to how they evolved. This was in the 70s, and that was, for me, the only time to see Aerosmith. They played at Comiskey Park. just a tremendous presence from that band. I really, really loved them. But everything they did in the 80s and very little of it I found to be compelling. I would term now they're a top 10 band for me. One of my favorite, might be my second favorite American band behind the Doors. But when you love four albums from any band,
yeah,
that's a significant band.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether you hate the stuff that came out, whichever your band is, if you can find four records that you can't live without for the rest of your life, that is an important band to you. And I do have their first four are must listen for me.
Are you a Metallica fan? I don't think I've ever really heard you talk Metallica.
Not particularly.
They were number seven on this list. Let's see here. AC/DC 5, we got that. The Who 4, 3, Pink Floyd.
Okay, I should have named that one already.
Yeah, Pink Floyd is number 3. Number 2, Led Zeppelin. Greatest live bands of all time. And number 1?
Which they stopped touring in 1980, okay. So that's kind of weird that they would still have a presence on that list.
I don't know if I'm
It's had to be a baby boomer who wrote this.
Do you want to take a crack at number 1? Now you're not going to get it. Queen. Queen is number 1. I don't know about that.
Aren't they kind of missing a key figure?
Queen? Yeah, I think this is historical, though. Obviously, time, Led Zeppelin haven't. Yeah. They've been broken up since 1980. Yes, they are.
Of all
That's
time.
A great observation on Shep's part.
Foo Fighters make the top. Alice Cooper, your guy.
I've 22. Seen Alice probably as much as any band I've ever seen, any artist I've ever seen.
Grateful Dead, people love.
Elton John should be on the list.
I don't know that he is. David Bowie is 20. The Beatles are 19.
David
Pearl
Bowie
Jam
band
18.
Also missing a key component, Chip.
David Bowie. Guns
what about
N'
David
Roses?
Bowie? Is he on the list?
David Bowie? No, he's still sitting there at second base. 16 is Kiss. The Doors is 15. The Doors. How
Doors
about
are.
An Our Band?
What?
Rush.
Oh,
14.
The Canadian Power Trio. The
Canadian Power Trio.
Yeah. Which era do you favor? Of Rush.
Wow. You know, probably the older stuff. But I was talking
when
today,
you say older stuff.
I mean like.
You mean Signals?
Temples of Syrinx.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
2112. That's their fourth album.
2112. I was talking to you today about the song Subdivisions, which you're not really down with.
I like it. It's not my favorite, but that was on the Signals album, I think.
So
yeah.
you're more early, though.
Bruce Miles, the baseball writer, did a tribute on Rush and Subdivisions. Divisions in particular late last week that was actually a pretty good I say it like I'm surprised. I shouldn't be surprised. He is outside of his typical forum, and he wrote a nice column about what Rush's music meant to him, and Subdivisions in particular being a song that sort of defined for him his Rush fandom.
I went back and watched the documentary again, the Rush documentary. It's just so good. And I'm all,
which
I'm
doc are you talking about? There were a couple of them.
The most recent one that was made in like
the
R40
tour.
Ago. No,
the
no.
one that was based on their last tour.
Time no.
Stand Still. Then it would have been the one about 5 years ago, Beyond the Lighted Stage.
Nope.
Grover. Beyond the Lighted Stage?
I think it was. But you know what? Let's just say, for the sake of this moment, yes,
nope.
It was Beyond the Lighted Stage. That's what it was. But I did not know, I have to admit. The second time I've watched it, I did not know that Neil Peart was responsible for writing most of their music.
Yeah,
except
yeah.
for the very early stuff.
Right.
He wasn't in the band.
Right. He was not there for their first album. That was a drummer named John Rutsey who put it together. He had diabetes and was a terrible, terrible alcoholic. They couldn't seriously consider going on the road with John playing the drums. So enter the professor, Neil Peart, and the rest was history.
Took
he joined
over.
Him on Fly By Night and did most of their writing. Yeah, all the mythology and all the stuff that followed was, most of it I really, really liked.
It's pretty amazing, too, like their fan base, basically all guys.
Tons of guys licking each other's bases,
as
Zoe said in the movie I Love You, Man.
Very considered a nerdy band. I guess I never realized that, that they are considered kind of a nerdy band as well. Maybe just because of the lyrics, probably, because of the highbrow.
I don't know.
type of
nerdy.
Yeah.
Geddy Lee describes himself as nerdy.
Yeah.
And some in that documentary, some Rush, one of the documentaries, I know the name of the one I'm referring to, was on the R40 tour. They talking about their nerddom, but that was at a Rush Con. They have an annual convention where all the Rush heads get together. So anybody who goes to that, probably a little nerdy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
conventioners.
The power trio. And it indicated here, too, in this article that they may still go back out there. I don't know that you can do that without Neil or who would step in for Neil. I don't think so.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know. I mean, there was an indication of that. So, I mean, there's probably a lot of drummers who would love to take a crack at it just because they all love Neil, but I don't know.
The Who continued to perform for decades after Keith Moon died in 1978. The Who are still going. I don't know if you replace guys like that.
Yeah, that'd be tough. And
easy, but when the music is defined by the guy on the drum kit, as Rush often is, as the Who often were, it's tough to.
Well, they could pull a "This is what Neil would have wanted" line, something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, they seem pretty comfortable retiring or not touring anymore after 2015, anyway. Even when Neil was with us, so yeah, I don't know. I'd go see it though, wouldn't you?
Yeah. So I absolutely. Yeah. Someone's fighting with me on grammar. Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
Ooh,
you're wrong.
I didn't realize there were two Rush documentaries.
Yes. Okay, we'll break. Stop Bears, talking Bears. About this old music already. Let's get to Hub Arkish in a few minutes on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.